Sometimes you just want the quick facts. No opinions, no speculation. I'm Claire Thornton, an audio editor with USA Today. My team works around the clock to bring you the Five Things podcast. Every morning, me and my co-host Taylor Wilson help you know what to keep an eye out for that day. We always have a fresh mix of stories, from politics to entertainment to sports, covering all parts of the country. On Sundays, you can lean back with in-depth episodes about stories you may have heard earlier that week. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows and start listening to Five Things today.
Inside Florida Politics, powered by the USA Today Florida Network. Ron DeSantis keeps acting like a presidential candidate. Desperate national Democrats may be taking another look at Florida's U.S. Senate race. And DeSantis weighs in during the final weeks of Florida's legislative session. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson. And those are some of the stories I'll be discussing this week with Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy and Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. But first, well, gentlemen, we're about 2 months into 2024, a busy election year, about 2 weeks away from the end of Florida's legislative session. So there's a lot going on. What kind of numbers do you have for us today, John?
Well, Zach, I did come packing a number this week, and this is Florida. I'm carrying a 22.
All right, John, packing heat. How about you, Antonio?
You know my mantra, John goes high, I go low. I got a 17.
17. All right. And I'm above everybody with a 600 this week. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll let you know what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, South Carolina voters will head to the polls this week to cast their ballots in the Republican presidential primary between Nikki Haley and Donald Trump. The primary has been a one-on-one matchup since DeSantis dropped out of the race in January. So why did DeSantis show up in South Carolina this week? That's a question that was on the minds of some political observers when DeSantis announced a press conference at the South Carolina State Capitol. John, this event ostensibly was about DeSantis's push to enact congressional term limits. He wants to do a constitutional convention, but it comes right as this primary campaign is heating up. And it really seems like lately he's really been going out of his way to do events where he's trying to be in the national spotlight.
It does seem like DeSantis is trying to keep his name and his face out there. As you point out, in South Carolina, while he seemed to go on mostly about the need for term limits for members of Congress, an interesting idea, but something that may require a virtually unprecedented constitutional convention to enact. He did also manage to take a swipe at Nikki Haley for her continued candidacy. So I guess that amounts to a little bit of a kiss the ring moment for his devotion to Donald Trump. But DeSantis also seems to be hedging his bets some. He's trying to dent Haley as the only possible alternative to Trump by keeping his name out there. But then in a private phone conversation with supporters that a handful of reporters listened in on, DeSantis took some shots at Trump, casting him as playing identity politics when it comes to choosing a running mate. In other words, trying to add a minority or woman to his ticket, saying he had no interest in being Trump's running mate, says DeSantis. And then DeSantis blasted conservative media for playing up to Trump during primary season. So, there's a lot this week from DeSantis on this, a lot of things to unpack there. Presumably the idea would be that somehow heading into this summer's Republican National Convention, if Trump's frontrunner status is in jeopardy for the nomination because of criminal convictions, more indictments, or a health episode for this still spry, but not exactly spring chicken 77-year-old, then DeSantis, the old Yale baseball captain, he seems to be saying he's ready to grab a bat and come in off the bench as a pinch hitter. But, to further complicate matters, we'll probably at some point later this year, you'd also think you'll be seeing DeSantis make more vigorous appearances on Trump's behalf in various states, kind of a get out the vote appearance somewhere. But that will make DeSantis a good, loyal Republican advocate that will help him with the party faithful. But when it comes to Trump not making it to the ballot and DeSantis being a late substitute, you know, I think the governor at this point is really more like Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber. He might be thinking, so you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah. And to be clear, it seems like a pretty outside chance, especially this election cycle. But it does seem like potentially DeSantis is trying to stay in the mix in 2028. If Trump flames out, that maybe he can say, I told you so. And throw his hat in the ring for 2028 or even later. You know, he's very young. So it seems like he definitely wants to keep his national profile up, though. Antonio, John mentioned that DeSantis took a dig at Trump's Veep selection process this week in a private call with donors. That really resulted in another round of open hostilities from Trump world. They didn't like that at all. They started savaging DeSantis again on social media. What did you make of that?
Well, I thought it was kind of interesting when first Trump offered up the idea that DeSantis could be one of his vice presidential running mates, which struck me by surprise. So now that he's being savaged again, I guess that means maybe he's not on the VP shortlist anymore.
Things move quickly in Florida politics.
Especially in Trump world. But one thing I do say before we get too much into this DeSantis, perhaps VP talk, the 12th Amendment states that the president and the vice president should not be from the same state. And a constitutional scholar down here, Kevin Wagner, has explained a number of times in the past that if that were the case, they would have to forfeit Florida's 30 electoral votes. And I don't think that's Mr. Trump is going to want to do that. So yeah. Perhaps it wasn't that much to lose by the governor maybe getting himself bumped off that list.
Yeah. And it was always, that was pretty far-fetched. And it was interesting. Trump only really said that he was open to DeSantis as a vice president when he was asked about it specifically by a Fox News host who listed a bunch of other candidates. And he just said, sure, yeah, they're all great people, but it's not a name that he was floating himself. And after that contentious primary, it really seemed very highly unlikely. And now that they're back to attacking each other on social media, that seems like it's pretty much off the table. When we come back, are national Democrats taking another look at Florida's U.S. Senate race? Well, DeSantis' doomed presidential bid attracted a lot of attention. One Florida race that hasn't been getting as much scrutiny is the U.S. Senate contest between Rick Scott and Debbie Mukersell Powell. Florida's U.S. Senate races used to be some of the most blockbuster contests in the country. They received intense national interest and tons of spending. But there are big questions about whether that will continue this cycle. Florida has been trending red, and Scott is extremely wealthy and willing to spend his own money. And that has led some to believe that national Democrats will skip this contest. But Antonio, Democrats don't really have a lot of options. They're really playing a lot of defense on the Senate map this cycle. And the even some of their defensive options don't look great. It looks like they could lose a seat or two that they hold right now. And their options for offense are really limited to Florida and Texas. So there's a sense maybe that they might have to reconsider this state. What are you hearing?
Well, they're going to reconsider it, but they may not like what they're reconsidering, because the fact of the matter is that Florida, as we have written about a number of times, is pretty much in the red category. And the fact, you know, we've talked about how Florida voter registrations have really trended big time in the Republicans' direction. And if we go back into our Inside Florida Politics podcast time machine, remember about this time last year, we were wondering who's going to run against Rick Scott. And then we saw the floating of really just some fantastical wishful thinking. Dwayne Wade, the former Miami Heat star, Fred Gutenberg, who is one of the Parkland parents whose daughter was killed at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting and has become somewhat of a big figure in the gun safety movement. His name got bandied about. So the problem right now is it's all about math. And Democrats have a very slim 51 to 49 seat majority, but they're probably going to lose the West Virginia race where Joe Manchin is retiring. And that's a deep, deep red state. In fact, West Virginia is so red, it makes Florida look pink. And then you've got a potential loss in Maryland where Ben Cardin, the Democrat, is retiring as well. And Larry Hogan, the very popular former governor of Maryland, has thrown his name in the ring there. And then, of course, there's Arizona, where you've got Kristen Sinema, who is an incumbent, but has decided to be an independent, not a Democrat. And that could be a three-way race between Sinema, the incumbent, and then Ruben Gallegos, the Democratic congressman who's running for the Democratic nomination, and then Carrie Lake, the really big-time MAGA star in Arizona. So that could be another loss. So right there, there's three seats that are in play. So they got to take one from the Democrat. I'm sorry, they got to take one from the Republicans. The really two options they're kind of looking at. One is Texas, where Ted Cruz is up for re-election. I actually talked to Ted Cruz about his race at Mar-a-Lago a couple of weeks ago at an event, and he seemed pretty confident. You know what? 6 years ago, everybody was betting on Beto O'Rourke to knock him off and didn't really even come close. And then there's Rick Scott, who won his race back in 2018 by just 10,000 votes. But as we've talked about, 2018 is a far, far time away.
And it's really remarkable that you could go from winning a race by 10,000 votes to being off the table. And I think Democrats are struggling to come to grips with that. But things have changed remarkably in 6 years in Florida. You know, you talked about the voter registration. You talked about, I mean, DeSantis won by almost 20 points. Do you think that there's a real shot that national Democrats invest in this race because they really didn't invest anything at all in the midterm elections in Florida?
No, they didn't. And, you know, the fact of the matter is they did invest significantly in 2022 trying to have Val Demings knock off Marco Rubio. Now, Marco Rubio is a lot more popular in Florida than Rick Scott has demonstrated in his elections. But nonetheless, you know, I haven't seen that kind of money pouring into the Democrats running for the nomination here. And then you're going up against Rick Scott, who has a lot of money to spend and who is
shown he's willing to spend it. I mean, literally, $100 million in some races, which is an astronomical amount of money. And if you're a Democrat thinking, where am I going to spend my money? It seems like going up against Scott is could be a daunting task. But like you said, they don't have a lot of options, do they?
No, that's basically all they got. When you look at that map, it's just not looking good for them to hold that Senate majority.
Well, we'll see how that race develops. You know, it is really the big marquee race in Florida this year, other than the presidential race. And it's not even clear if Democrats are going to play in the presidential race in Florida and whether Biden's campaign will invest here at all. So this election season will really be important to watch to see if Democrats feel like this state is still in play at all. And you'll know it by how much they spend here. When we come back, we'll discuss the last 2 weeks of Florida's 60-day legislative session. Well, there are 2 weeks left in Florida's 60-day legislative session, and a lot of questions remain, including whether DeSantis can continue to exert his will on the legislative process. John, how's DeSantis doing when it comes to his legislative priorities?
Well, you know, he'd had complete control over this Republican-led legislature the last couple of years. This year, it's not perfect. While he's still going to get most of what he wants this year, the few moments when there is a difference between the governor and the legislature, well, those moments kind of shine a little bit brighter because we've not seen them before. Kathleen Passidomo, the Senate president, for example, she's put the kibosh on a couple of bills that ban local governments and schools from putting up pride flags, and another that bans the removal of Confederate monuments. Now, DeSantis hadn't really clamored for these bills, but the Florida Republican Party did, and that the party is largely an extension of DeSantis. You know, all told, it's kind of part of an overall stop woke brand that DeSantis likes to boast about. But in this case, it looks like that's not going to happen. And just this past week, a bill advanced that the governor's allies seemed to suggest that it caught him by surprise, where the House wanted to bring back the state's runoff primaries. That's the second primary that we used to have in the last century. We last had one in, I think it's 2001. But right now it's only you win a primary just with a plurality of the votes. The runoffs are designed to make it where you have to win a majority of the vote in your party primary. Some Trump allied legislators, including a couple of former Florida Republican chairs, pushed back really hard against this idea, which was kind of generally viewed as a potentially designed to prevent MAGA candidates from winning primaries with a slim plurality of the vote.
Yeah, there was a thought that maybe it was aimed at Matt Gaetz, the firebrand Republican congressman from the Panhandle, who's a top Trump ally and has been rumored that he wants to run for governor.
Right. And Gaetz, with that said, also kind of fed into that suspicion. And he said he's not running for governor. But well, this is, you know, February of 2024. We'll see what it's like in 2026 if he's really running or not. But yeah, I think there's a lot of political gamesmanship at play. But some tell me that, you know, DeSantis certainly knew about the idea to bring back the runoff, but then began protesting when he saw that it lacked full support. So there's a view that it's part of an effort by DeSantis to kind of, you know, help pick the field for who will succeed him as governor. You know, does he really care? Well, it seems hard to believe that a bill like this would get rolled out without the governor's knowledge. Anyway, the bill right now looks kind of dead or at least troubled. But beyond that flashpoint, DeSantis also has struggled to get the House on board with his idea for a property insurance tax break. And he had no success in trying to get Miami Beach Fountain Blue hotel boss Jeffrey Sofer to get him legislation that could open the door to a casino at the hotel. So that was something that the House again just ruled out. So for DeSantis, this session has been not exactly the wide open highway that it's been in the past. You know, you wonder why. Maybe it's just that he's lost some of his star power. And then also he put in little time trying to prepare a package of proposals or anything like that, or right. win fellow it's, Republicans over. He was like, out in Iowa.
Yeah, it seemed like when he was running for president, he kind of took his eye off the legislature a little bit, didn't have as many priorities this year, not as many hot button issues that he was pushing. He's kind of come back after dropping out of the presidential race and said, oh, I'm interested in things like, going after public displays of homelessness, things like that. But these weren't really things that he was talking about before the session.
Yeah, he was too busy out in Iowa, you know, and he wasn't paying attention to what was soon to unfold in Tallahassee, which is the legislative session. So, he's kind of late in the game right now. It's an interesting dynamic where many of us are looking for signs that the his fellow Republicans are breaking with him. But I think in small ways they are. But, in the larger list of legislation, I think he's still going to come out of this session looking like he got most of what he wanted.
Yeah. In general, they seem to want to agree with him, if for no other reason than that he can veto all of their bills. And so they want to stay on his good side. But it's interesting now that Trump world is savaging him again. Maybe they're not quite as afraid of him. Trump's the big dog here. And DeSantis has been diminished somewhat.
Yeah. Yeah. Because these legislators hold an allegiance to Trump, but they also see that DeSantis still has some level of popularity in Florida, and they're all running again for re-election. So they want to be on the good side of whoever can help them, undoubtedly.
Well, just 2 weeks to go here. A lot happens in the final weeks of the legislative session, so we'll be keeping an eye on that. But we'll move on to some numbers now. Antonio, you want to tell us about yours?
Yeah, Zach, I had 17, which is the number of students and faculty members that were killed in the 2018 Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School mass shooting. And this year, we just about a week and a half or so ago, we honored and marked the sixth anniversary of the shooting. And this year, there's been quite a bit of reflection, largely because government officials and others have been taken on a tour of the building where the massacre took place. And just in the last month, we've had the U.S. Secretary of Education and the second highest ranking member of the Democratic caucus in Congress go through the building. And afterwards, there were a number of discussions about what they saw, how they viewed it. And I was able to listen in on those discussions. But I have to tell you that 6 years later, the legacy of the school shooting is a lot more complicated than maybe it looked like a couple of years ago. It's obviously the tragedy led to the passage in Florida of major reforms to gun safety measures, the red flag laws, the raising the age to 21, and so forth. And it's been a model for other states and even some congressional action about 2 years ago. But beyond that, the discussion today focuses on things like how to make schools more like fortresses, things like automatic locks on doors and putting film on windows so that a shooter can't see through them, and having armed guards on property. And it struck me that one point during one of these discussions, there was an analogy drawn to September 11th and how after the attacks on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and elsewhere through the airlines, how airport security was ramped up and how airliners themselves with cockpit safety doors and so forth. And that's what we need to do now. And it struck me that it's a troubling analogy given that global terrorism is worldwide. It happens everywhere, whereas mass shootings only happen in this country. This is the only country in the world where this happens. And it seems to me that just the discussion of how are you going to harden all these public places seems very complicated if that's really the solution. If the solution is not more action on gun safety, if the solution is basically protecting people against shooters. It's a very complicated answer. And just to underscore this, on the day that we marked the sixth anniversary of the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas, there was a shooting at a mall in Palm Beach County, at the Gardens Mall in Palm Beach Gardens. And one person was injured, two people have now been arrested. But basically, that day, there was a mad scramble, a lot of fear, a lot of scared people in that mall. And ultimately, the mall at 2 in the afternoon on a busy St. Valentine's Day shopping day was shut down for the rest of the day and didn't reopen until the next day. So 6 years later, yeah, a lot was done in Florida. A lot of good things were done. But the legacy of that school shooting is still a very complicated one.
Yeah. And it's really evolved over the years. You know, initially there was some effort by Republicans in the legislature to do some gun control measures. And they also have armed guards in schools and even armed some teachers. And now there's been talk about repealing some of those gun measures since then. And it seems like the only thing that they can agree on is more funding for this school hardening. So maybe that's the reason why it's gone in that direction. Well, John, you want to tell us about your number?
Yeah, Zach, the 22 that I came in with is that's the number of general bills, local bills, resolutions, and memorials that have been approved by both the House and Senate this year. 22 out of 1,887 that have been filed. That's only 1% of all the bills that have been filed have actually cleared the House and Senate this year. So, you know, you hear a lot about the do-nothing Congress, locked in partisan gridlock. But you're right if you think that a 1% passage rate is low for a Florida legislature with Republican supermajorities. You know, I occasionally turn to these stats during legislative sessions just to see how we're doing. And this year's output does seem a little low, given past history. It's never super high at this point, but at this point of the session. But still, 1% seems to be less than usual. I often liken the legislative process to an NBA game, with most of the action occurring in the closing moments. But we're heading into the final 2 weeks of the session, so you know maybe there's still a lot to do. Then again, maybe not. Maybe this legislature is sort of content with, when you look at the lineup of bills this year, which include plenty of controversial measures, you know, creating a fetal personhood, more LGBTQ restrictions, the removal of a lot of local government authority. Well, you know, for many people watching this legislature, you know, no action will be a good thing. So, that 1% passage rate is certain to improve, but by how much? You know, next 2 weeks will tell us.
All right. Legislature with a pretty low field goal percentage there. We'll see if they get it up in the final 2 weeks. Well, my number is 600. That's how many books were challenged in Florida last year by just two individuals. That number came from a really good Tampa Bay Times story. They did a comprehensive look at book challenges in Florida, and they found that there were about 1,100 book challenges submitted in Florida schools last year by members of the public. So that 600 from just two individuals means that just two individuals accounted for more than half of all of the book challenges in Florida last year. And that number is important because Governor DeSantis has been out talking about the school book issue. He recently did a press conference where he came out and said that he wanted to make changes in state law regarding the book issue. You know, these book bans in Florida, as a lot of people call them, which DeSantis pushes back on that term and says it's a hoax, it's become a huge issue in the state over the last year. It's attracted a lot of national attention. National groups have been weighing in saying Florida is trying to censor school books. It really all cropped up after DeSantis passed some laws that restricted what could be in school books, particularly anything related to sexual discussions, and some new requirements for school districts as to how they handle this book content has really caused a lot of confusion, a lot of controversy in Florida over the last year. And DeSantis has felt the need to really come out on multiple occasions and talk about this issue, recognizing that it has become a really hot button issue. And his latest comments, he seemed to acknowledge that removing books from school has gone too far, and said that there are, quote, bad actors in the system who are, quote, gumming up the works and trying to, put in too many book challenges, which was an interesting acknowledgement for him that some members of the public have gone too far with this. But in that same press conference, he really slammed school districts and said that they have overreacted and that they're preemptively removing books from the schools and denying children access to classic books. But school districts say that there's really, it's been difficult to interpret these laws, and that there's still a lot of confusion around the laws that DeSantis passed and a lot of ambiguity. But this looks to be an issue that will continue. DeSantis has endorsed legislation cracking down on book challenges, but also is asking the Department of Education to move forward with new rules that could penalize school districts if they preemptively remove books. So that'll be a big thing to watch over the next year. That wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production guru, Rob Landers. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. We're out of here.